Good evening. Welcome to the Kentroversy Tapes podcast number 3. Today's date is Monday, June 11th, 2007. Tonight, we have a real treat in store for you. My guest is Freeman of the award-winning television show, The Freeman Perspective, which broadcasts out of Austin, Texas, USA. In addition to his TV show, Freeman can also be found on the radio with our good friends at Revere Radio Network. The complete information on all of Freeman's writings and broadcasts can be found at his two websites, freemantv.com and freemanarchives.com. The Freeman Archives website features the March 2006 appearance that I personally made on the Freeman Perspective. Freeman's work can also be located by entering Blue Fly Productions into any Google video search engine. What I wanted to do tonight is go over some of the things that you've been talking about in your articles, your broadcasts, and in your email messages and your notices that you send out. And I also wanted to introduce you to some of my listeners and readers who may not be familiar with your work. And I wondered if we could just start with you beginning with who you are, what you do, and what is your contribution to this world?
Well, you know, my whole life has been serendipitous synchronicity and has led me down a path that I didn't choose. Things came my way. And I just did my best with what came my way, and it led me forward. Now, it's very surprising to me now to be able to say that I'm an internationally known award-winning TV producer.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly never expected my life to turn to that. But through a strange occurrence of events, that's where I ended up. A homeless man did my numerology on a city bus,
and
later left a note on my van saying I needed to go to this meeting at a mall. And I went, and it was ex-Bilderberger, George Green, speaking about contact with the Palladians that are contacted Billy Meyer. And so I'm sitting there listening to his lecture, quite amazed at what he's telling us and the pictures he's showing. And, of course, the flying saucers that they show are the same ones that Fox Mulder has on his poster. I want to believe that's one of Billy Meyer's pictures.
Yes.
And I'm in that meeting, and he's showing us some pictures of the Palladians themselves. And they look very much like us, you know, and even more so like me, because I was probably the wildest-looking person in the crowd. At this mall, and he kind of looked at me, George Green did, and said, yeah, sometimes the Palladians will sit in on these lectures, and he was looking right at me when he said that. I've always believed, you know, perhaps I was a Palladian, a walk-in or something, you know, I play with that type of thought, and we went out for a cigarette break, and I started spewing some of my conspiracy theories on corporate logos and what the real meaning of W is and all of this, that, and the other, and one of the people there was a city council member who says, you know, you need to have a TV show. I'm like, I could have a TV show? And he said, oh, yeah, absolutely. It's only $180, and you just go and take the classes. And I said, well, you know, I don't really have $180. I was living in a van on 37th Street, you know. And he says, well, would you do it? And I said, absolutely, I'd do it. And he wrote me a check right there on the spot.
Wow. Wow, that's impressive.
Being an honorable person, you know, all of a sudden I knew I had to put on a TV show because I won't accept somebody's money and not do with it what they say, or, you know.
Sure,
but sure. It was right. And so I quickly got together a little laptop and started piecing together corporate logos in Colombia. And next thing I knew, I was an international star.
So when did all this happen? What year was this?
Let's see. I'm really bad with space time. That's something you'll learn. I never know when or where I am.
Okay.
But I believe I've been on TV for 3 years now.
Well, that's quite an interesting introduction. Another thing that I wondered if you wouldn't mind sharing with our listeners tonight is tell us a little bit about your dad and what he did with his time and how you feel about what he did.
You know, I firmly believe in the ideas within the Celestine Prophecies by James Redfield.
Yes, I agree.
I actually, you know, serendipitously ran into James one day just to confirm my reality a little more for myself. But, so I do firmly believe that before birth, we do choose where we're going to go. And to have my parents be who they are was quite intriguing because I myself was already deep within the studies of ancient astronauts, UFOs, why the pyramids are there. And then eventually, by the time I got to college, I learned of Freemasonry.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know anything about it until then. And once I did, I started to go, oh my God, you know, this stuff all looks very familiar. And I realized that it was my dad's thing, so that I was, you know, seeing the compass square and D, and I was like, I know that symbol, why do I know that?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So I found out that way, that my father was a Freemason. He never spoke to me about this. And so then I started to question it.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that my mother was married to the Grand Potentate of German Freemasonry.
Wow.
Yeah. And that, you know, that's kind of like the Pope of Freemasonry.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, sure.
And she ended up running into my father at a Masonic event, and
mm-hmm.
they fell in love. And then they found each other in the U.S. because my mother is from Luxembourg. And ended up getting together and finally getting married. And you cannot marry another worshipful master's wife within Freemasonry and still belong to the order. So my dad had to leave Freemasonry in order to marry my mom, who my mom was in the Eastern Star, which is the female version of Masonry.
Mm-hmm.
She
mm-hmm.
held the position of Esther.
Oh, that's interesting.
One of the ritual women that sat on the pentagram.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, my father, as a Freemason prior to my birth, was on Killer One submarine with Jimmy Carter. And then he went on to Project Blue Book and was a radar operator for Project Blue Book, and he would actually track the flying saucers as they came into our airspace. Well, he was stationed in a South Sea island where they just had 4 radar dishes, and they would track incoming UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, my question to my dad was, well, are flying saucers real?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And all he ever said to me about it was, yeah, flying saucers are real. And that's all I ever got out of him about that subject. And then he went on to start building nukes when I was born.
Mm-hmm.
And we got shipped off to North Dakota so that he could build nukes out there. And then when the SALT II treaty was signed, he was then shipped back to take them all apart again.
Oh, wonderful.
So, yeah, Dad's life, his entire life was top secret. So I never really did find out a whole lot from him.
Mm-hmm.
And when I finally did, I got my TV show, and I was just about to begin, and before I did, I wanted to go back to Florida, and now I really had some, you know, I really wanted to dig into his brain, and, you know, I knew he was coming near his end, and I really wanted to get what I could out of him before he passed.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a ticket to go, but I got postponed, and I really don't remember why now, but it got delayed for a week or two, and on the very day that I would have shown up, he died.
Oh, jeez.
And so I never did get to question him on anything further.
Hmm.
And I really really do think he was going to give me some stuff. I really do. And I, you know, sometimes entertain conspiracy theories on, because he was not sick or anything when he died. He just mm-hmm. did not wake up the next day.
Yeah, the old infamous deathbed confession, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Of course, nobody expected him to die then. Mm-hmm. Really, mm-hmm. after he left the Masons, he pretty much lost all lust for life. And this to me is something very curious, because once you give yourself to this order, then it seems that once you leave it, you start to just die. And that's very much what happened to my father. He just lost all lust for life after leaving.
Could it have been, perhaps, that he so identified with it that once it was no longer a part of his life, that he found himself listless and drifting, perhaps?
That's what I think.
Okay.
That and, you know, the prestige that comes along with it, because, you know, if you're a Mason, you get all the best jobs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Your TV show, The Freeman Perspective, is excellent. And, of course, I tremendously enjoyed doing an episode with you back in March of 2006. And you were just mentioning about how you got started through this meeting with George Green and so forth. And I wondered if you could just tell me a little bit more about the training classes and how this award-winning aspect of this came to be.
Well, the training was very slim, to say the least. The teacher that I consistently had for each of the camera, because you go in, you first learn the cameras, and then you learn the editing equipment, and then I moved on up to the studio,
mm-hmm.
and you have to go through that progression.
Right.
But the teacher that I had did not care whatsoever. And pretty much I had to learn as I went. And so, like, my first two airings did not get aired. I didn't know it, but we were live on television while we were all running around going, well, how do we do this?
Oh,
the
wow.
whole screen was actually orange, and I could never figure out how to not make it orange because nobody had ever taught me what to do if things aren't right.
Right, right.
And so I learned something every single time I walked in that studio. And so it was quite an adventure, to say the least. And kind of, yeah, I'm surprised I still have my hair. But, once, things like this I have the ability to do these type of things. It doesn't seem to me to be all that complicated. So when I aired my first show, I actually then didn't do it live. I went ahead and pre-taped it because I was having so many problems. And I did all my editing in iMovie. So all of my films that I made in the early, well, still, are done on iMovie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just basic Macintosh comes with the computer program.
Yep, I have it on mine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I did all of my work at home as opposed to at the studio.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just went in and aired it during my live time.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Went in and played the tape.
So when,
that way I had the best of both worlds.
When did it become live at that point?
Well, I continued. Each episode, each half hour took me over 2 months to create. Editing is a very slow process, especially if you don't know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I really got prepared beforehand, and I had corporate logos in Columbia done. And then the weeks started to catch up with me. You know, I no longer had 2 months of time to edit. And so I had to just start throwing things together real fast, and I put out the chemtrail video, which wasn't mine, but was, fair use, free to use. So I aired that because I knew that was important, and I really wanted to do a show on chemtrails, but I didn't have time to edit one. So and then during all this time, I was still working on the harp video, and that's the one that won me the award, which was great because all of the city council members and everybody had to watch it in order to vote on it. And that's the one that won me the award for first effort.
Oh, that's excellent. In fact, that's a great episode, too. And I enjoyed seeing that, and it was educational. You know, you do good work, absolutely. And, you know, the thing that I wanted to ask you about your show is, are you on hiatus now, or is this thing canceled, or what's going on?
I am on hiatus. Now, what had happened was, through further serendipitous events, Jack Blood announced that there was a TV producer coming from Portland, Oregon, who is Alex Ansary.
Mm-hmm.
I highly recommend checking out alexansary.com. He has a TV show in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And he was coming to Austin to contact all of the conspiracy theorists that live here, because, well, there's a vast assortment of conspiracy theorists here in Austin for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
So I immediately picked up on the challenge and called up Jack Blood, and said, hey, you know, I'd gladly show him around and do all the filming and, you know, anything that he needs. And so I ended up meeting Tex Mars, Galen Robb, Zach White, Alex Jones, and all the people that I had on my next season through Alex Ansary as we were going around filming these people at their homes. And each time when we were done, I would ask the person, well, you know, I'm about to have a TV show. Would you guys like to come on my show? And so then my whole second season was filled with these guests. And it really made me quite a bit more popular. But honestly, the one that made me the most popular was Michael Tsarian.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why, but he has a very large draw. And, I mean, he has a lot of data, so I can understand why. But he's the one that really put the Freeman perspective on the internet map.
That's
so
interesting.
For the third season, I didn't know what I was going to do again, but I went down and signed up, you know. But I decided I was just going to have people phone in, like you. And my first guest was Michael Tsarian, and I was very excited. You know, this was the first time I'd talked to, you know, somebody that was, I felt was a rather large personality, and of course he didn't let me speak a whole lot, but it was okay. So each of the seasons kind of laid themselves out for me, and by the third season I was just looking on my bookshelves going, who would I like to talk to? And this was the most amazing part of this whole thing, was the ability to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Pick somebody off my shelf and call them up, and, you know, and I've got their home phone numbers, and they all sent me autograph books, and, you know, this is all very fun in the craziness that it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So by the time I was done with that season, I really didn't know who else to have on, and I really needed a break. You can burn yourself out pretty quick with this, because trying to have, oh my if you've looked at the Anna Nicole video with Corey Cordis, then you might get an idea how difficult it is to have the control room people do what I ask them to
mm-hmm,
do.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was really stressing me out, and so I couldn't find really anybody to help me in the ways that I was hoping things would get done. And so I kind of just got fed up. And I never wanted to be just a talking head. I never wanted to be somebody that sat there and just, you know, nodded as the other person spoke, or, you know, having a radio show on TV to me was kind of strange. And so I just stopped at that point because I didn't really know what I was going to do next. And so now I'm on that hiatus, and I will start again in fall.
Okay,
because
good.
I want to go to Rainbow. I'm going to wait.
Glad to hear that, because you're missed at this point. What I also would like you to share with our listeners is your very fascinating ideas about the following things, which are all related. Creative play, love, synchronicity. And if you could just add on to that, what is exactly the Freeman perspective, and how did you find that perspective?
Well, my life never really fit into the box. I've never, I didn't understand the concept of money when I was in school. It didn't make any sense to me, and a lot of the things that they were teaching us didn't make any sense to me. And I was one of those kids that were too smart for school and always in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and, me too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so by the time I was done with school, or they were done with me, one of the I just jumped in a van and just started living in a van. I never gave it any thought. It just is what I naturally did. And I became a beach bum.
Mm-hmm.
At Daytona Beach and New Smyrna Beach in Florida. And each day, the van would be filled up with gas. There would be at least a case of beer, if not, stacks of beer in the van, and just always something going on. We were always in penthouses and just places that you wouldn't expect beach bums to be. And it just kept leading forward. And people, later when I would start to relate my stories, they would say to me, well, where did you get the gas money? Or how did you live? How did you eat? And really, I had never thought about it until they asked. Good question, because I never begged or anything like that. We were just mm-hmm. always in the right place at the right time. And eating well,
mm-hmm.
I would tell people, the only thing I could really say is that we were professional partiers, I guess, We were compensated for being entertaining. I'm not sure. And it wasn't until the Philistine prophecies came out that I had the words to define what I was, what it was that I was doing. And when I read the Celestine prophecies, I was like, and that starts with a C. Everybody always misspells it with an S, and they're always mm-hmm. like, looking for that mm-hmm. book.
Yeah.
I had to throw that in there.
Yes, right.
So once that book came out, then I had a method. And then I was like, okay, this is what I'm doing right here. I'm friendly, uplifting person, and therefore things come my way. And they aren't just simple linear events. These are synchronistic events that come from a miraculous source, what I can only classify as divine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I had numerous events that occurred while I was practicing the insights put forward in the book, and that led me further along the trail. And I went ahead and started going to community college at that point and started studying philosophy. And once I was done with all of that, I decided to another event occurred where I learned how to make juggling sticks, and I became a traveling fool.
Yes.
It was quite amazing because here mm-hmm. I had gotten all these juggling sticks ready. And as soon as me and my friend, who was the magician who showed me the Freemasons and made me aware of my father's position in the world,
mm-hmm.
He came with, and he brought with him all his magical books, even though I really begged him not to because they were too heavy. But just as we were getting into the van to take off on the road, not knowing where we were going or what we were doing, neither one of us had ever really, been on the road. I never had been on the road, except for living in the van in my hometown. This little black and white spotted dog with polka dotted feet started pawing at my ankle. And as you know, this is the exact card, the tarot of the fool.
Yes, absolutely.
Stepping off the cliff into the unknown with this little dog while I was juggling. And so I archetypically became the fool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And here I was traveling with the magician. And eventually the magician dropped off and the van blew up, just as I had predicted because of all the weight. And so I ended up with an entire magician's library.
So this guy just disappeared, and he left all his books behind?
Well, the band died, and we were going to a Grateful Dead concert.
Okay.
And I never did like the Dead, but what I do like are large gatherings of people.
Mm-hmm.
Simply lovely, wonderful people that, more the Rainbow than the Dead. The Dead had really turned me off with their hyper-capitalism, but, or the Deadheads, I should say.
Yeah.
I never did like the Dead, but I liked going where all the people were.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were on our way to the show, and this is where he was going to jump off and go stay with his father anyway.
Okay.
But before we could get to the show, the van blew up. It blew the main seal, and it just sat there, and we walked. And it, another event that, you know, continually confirms my ideas, my friend was all upset, like, oh, we better get to walking, you know, it's going to be a long, hard trail. And I was like, no, you know, sit down. Somebody's going to come by and pick us up. And he's like, no. So I just sat down, and sure enough, it wasn't even 2 minutes later, and a car pulled up, a bunch of deadheads, like, hey, man, you're right, you know. And so we picked up my friend along the way, and we went to the concert, and he left to go stay with his dad. And we weren't, you know, after you stay with somebody in a small confined area like a van for a while, you tend to not want to be around each other too much anymore.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, sure.
Our goodbye was pretty brief. And mm-hmm. he just went on his way, and I was just left standing in this emptying parking lot as all the deadheads were just leaving, and I didn't know what I was going to do, and I was frightened, and it was dark, and everybody was leaving. There was one girl that I just happened to catch. She was one of the last vehicles leaving, and she, like, please, you know, I really need a ride. And she says, well, I'm going to Canada. I said, okay. And I jumped in her van, and off we went to Canada.
And the adventure continued.
The adventure absolutely continued.
Yeah.
Now, we had spent 9 days out in front of Bill Clinton's White House protesting the removal of national forests and as they were turning them all into national parks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I spent 9 days out in front of Bill Clinton's house. And a bunch of miraculous events, like the sewage main blew, and the entire White House was surrounded in crap for 3 days. And we were all like, yeah, Mother Nature knows we're here.
Little karma there.
It's amazing how you progress through your knowledge. You know, now I'm up to the point where I understand Bill Clinton was a mind-controlled slave. You know, at that point, I was just busy wondering how we could all be free. And just so many things can happen while you're on the road. Your life is so fulfilled. It's amazing to think that all these people are just sitting in their homes when they could all be out there. But we're trained to believe in the whole money thing, which is, of course, just an Illuminati spell to remove serendipity from you, because now you think you have to go get a job to do something. And you have to save up enough money. You know, I never took to that belief, and so therefore I don't need money. And I just do what I do, and I don't even consider it.
Yeah, in fact, in my personal life, whenever I get into a jam and I need, like, a quick $500 or whatever, I just think about it, and it manifests itself. I'll get something in the mail, which might be I overpaid my health insurance 10 years ago or something, and it's a check for exactly the dollar amount that I need, right to the penny. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah,
I've experienced that quite a number of times.
And I have so much faith now. So much faith in that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, I have 20 years of experience, if not longer, in it, that I went ahead and signed a lease here in Austin. And I don't have a job. I mean, I haven't had a job in 8 years. And yet, every month, somehow, some miraculous way, my rent gets paid. And, you know, I signed that lease knowing that I didn't have the money to pay rent. And just, I just knew I'd be fine.
And fine you are. Yeah, absolutely. One of the other things that I was definitely interested in hearing a little more about is you've done recently this trip across the country, research trip, part of the time you spent in Nashville, and you did some other traveling, and you mind talking about that for a minute?
Oh, not at all. Now, that was very interesting, because now I had just written the article on Anna Nicole Brittany and mind control.
Mm-hmm.
And to be quite honest, I was very frightened when I was done with that.
That's pretty hardcore. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was pretty frightened when I was done with that, because one, the information that I studied to understand all of that was traumatizing in its own self.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
The only time I'd ever been introduced to satanic ritual abuse was with David Icke's Biggest Secret.
Right.
And honestly, that was the hardest chapter I had in that whole book. I don't want to think about such things. But the universe just laid it out for me and forced me to study this. You know, first Jack Blood handed me a Program to Kill. And the book was signed by the author, and it said, read at your own risk. I did not heed that warning. And I finished that book, and I understood that serial killers were not what we thought they were, that they were actually fall guys for these satanic ritual groups.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, most military trained.
Right.
And so, serendipitously, I was led to the full understanding, and I already had an 8-page article written prior to them showing Anna Nicole's clown makeup and, you know, the total conclusion in my aha when I said, oh, my God, you know, this is mind control right here.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So my article actually got published on the day that they showed that in the courtroom. I didn't wait. I just went and grabbed all of the essential ingredients and put them out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had all of this on my mind, and I was really built up with fear. And I was really trying to combat it because, you know, fear only interferes with love. And I knew there was no real reason for it. Sometimes I thought I was under psychological warfare or, you know, psychic attacks. I didn't know. I just knew I was very frightened.
Did you think you were going to get a visit from somebody or?
I expected them to come at me legally.
Okay.
Howard K. Stern had hired the lawyer from the JonBenet Ramsey case.
Yeah, little coincidence there, huh?
Yeah. But, so, you know, I wasn't certain if they would come for me or not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A lot of people do ask when, like, Kathy O'Brien and me and others come forward, like, why are you allowed to speak? And I really think that a lot of it has to do with if they were to take action, it would build our credibility. At this point, people will go ahead and deny the information because they have it coming.
Yeah, in fact, that's exactly what Kathy told me. Coincidentally, Freeman, before I went public in June of 2005 with the controversy papers, I had contacted her. The brother of a friend of mine here in Buffalo is in her book, Transformation of America. And the individual that I'm referring to in this book is a photograph of a person she identifies as a major cocaine trafficker in the Virgin Islands. And this is the brother of a very close friend of mine. So when I saw this in her book, I took it to my friend. And I explained to him that, that there was a definite reason that his brother's photo was in this book. And so to make a long story short, I ended up contacting her just to make contact over that issue. And one of the things I did ask her about was the very thing you're talking about now is, you know, protection and, you know, what do you do once you start going public? And what she told me was that the very thing you just said, you know, if they take us out, that builds our credibility.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to throw that in there.
Well, it's good to hear her say that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was very interesting because when, after the whole Anna Nicole thing went down and Larry Birkhead had been declared the father, at that moment, Virgie Arthur, not to get too deep into the Anna Nicole story, but Virgie Arthur then came out and tried to keep Daniel Lynn,
mm-hmm.
the baby girl, in
mm-hmm.
the Bahamas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody please give me a rational explanation for that, being that she doesn't live in the Bahamas, and she had been fighting so hard to get everybody back to Texas. But it was at the moment that all of the fear left me. And I don't know why or what purpose or cause or anything, but at that moment when they announced that, I suddenly felt safe. And that, to me, I don't know why, but, you know, it was very interesting that Larry went to go get the passport for Daniel Lynn, and they happened to close the U.S. Embassy for the day.
Come on. I mean, this is just ridiculous, this whole story.
But so here I am with all these thoughts in my head, and I had this trip planned long before, and I start heading down Highway 10, heading towards Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize all of a sudden as I'm passing Houston, and I'm like, wait a minute, I'm on the Lisa Nowak trail. You know, Lisa Nowak was the space shuttle astronaut that all of a sudden flipped out.
The infamous diaper wearer.
Yes. And so here I am on the Lisa Nowak trail heading to Orlando. And, of course, I wasn't wearing a diaper and I didn't have any pepper spray with me. You know, I've heard that she's up on murder charges for the pepper spray incident.
Wow.
That's always so weird. But anyway, I went down to Orlando really to film the big phallus that they had erected in front of the city hall and the gushing vagina that sits next to it. And I talked about this often, so I wanted to get some pictures and film and visit mom for a while.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that was all very nice, but my real trip was to get some of these films. And so I went up to St. Augustine from there. And St. Augustine, it turns out, has the largest retired CIA. Like, more CIA retired at St. Augustine than anywhere. And I don't know why this is. Sometimes I think that they're returning to their fish bodies or something. I don't know. But they're all watching the Freeman Perspective. I just found that out. And I was like, oh, my God. You know, they're probably all sitting back going, God, this guy really knows what he's talking about. I'm glad nobody believes him. But, you know, they're airing the Freeman Perspective on in St. Augustine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I went to stay with the owner of the TV station out there, and I found myself running into all kind of fish people symbolism and also heavy Masonic symbolism. Like, there's a huge Masonic obelisk right next to where they sell the slaves, or they did sell the slaves back in, what was that? I can't remember the date that they were founded, but, you know, back in the early days, 1600s. So, just very heavily Masonically oriented, and of course there was Flagler College there, and Flagler is pals with the Rockefellers.
Mm-hmm.
And within the Flagler College, there are all these evil fish. I mean, they're the meanest looking fish I'd ever seen in the architecture. And it's very strange that they would have these evil fish. Very mean looking. And of course, penises galore. My God, they're everywhere. And then this one little over Flagler College where the statue of Flagler stands,
mm-hmm.
There is an archway. And in the archway, I see what looks like a portal and a little boy standing in the portal. And he has two angels or little cherubim, little babies, riding these weird fish monsters next to this child in a portal. And then they have the peacock of Juno, the goddess,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
with a couple of horses. And then next to that one is two fish-tailed cherubim worshiping a torch. And below them is an owl in a portal. And next to the owl in the portal is a little boy's face in a portal that is just totally traumatized. I mean, this little boy's face is horrific. And this is right on the front patio of Flagler College, which
wow.
is surrounded by Iron Maiden
uh-huh.
and spiked chains.
And you have film of all this, of course.
I have film of all of that.
Okay,
absolutely.
Great. I'm looking forward to that.
Are, of course, on freemantv.com. All the pictures are up
yeah, there. Yeah, the 300 slideshow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing to look at.
But and, I found myself sitting in Athena's restaurant in St. Augustine. And, of course, there's pictures of the Parthenon all over the place. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, man, you know, I just happened to be going to the Palace of Athena or the Temple of Athena in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that very coincidental. And the owner of Athena's is very a very nice guy. I got to know the owner of the restaurant really well. He was good friends with the owner of the TV station, WQXT. And he was very interested in the things that I had to say and also what Frederick had to say. And so we kept in good contact, and it turns out he's from Phrixa, Greece. And so he gave me a bottle of olive oil from Phrixa, Greece. And so here I was gifted Athena's gift, you know, in Athena's diner as I'm on my way to the Temple of Athena.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But before I did that, I went up and visited the Georgia Guidestones.
Yeah, that's an interesting place, definitely.
Yeah. Now,
what'd you think of that?
Something that's not mentioned by many or any, as far as I know, is that the Georgia Guidestones are surrounded by Hollywood. There are holly plants that surround the Guidestones.
Little druidic influence there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Hollywood is the druidic symbol of death and resurrection.
Yes, it is. Yep.
And, you know, the Guidestones themselves, as far as the rules go, I wasn't too concerned. I did a show with Jack Blood while I was there, and, you know, he wanted to go over all the rules, but that wasn't what really I was intrigued by. The rules are one thing, yeah, limit the population down to 500 million, have a world court, create a new living language to unite the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the last one on the list is be not a cancer on this earth. Leave room for nature. Leave room for nature.
Mm-hmm.
They said that twice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had gotten to know some of Folconelli's work and had learned about the Cross of Hende and how he had deciphered where to go at the end of the world because of a misspelling in the Greek that was on the Cross of Hende. So now I'm looking at this thing, and I see that they have this leave room for nature twice. And I'm thinking, well, there's a code in that, and I'm not sure what yet. You know, it's going to take some thought. But when I went over to the big memorial stone that's on the ground, just to the west of the ground, Guidestone, it has all of the astrological or astronomical descriptions of what the Guidestones do astronomically. And then below that it says it's put forward by a small group of concerned Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then it says the author is R.C. Christian.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then under that in parentheses it says a pseudonym,
mm-hmm.
which is misspelled.
Right.
And N-Y-N instead of N-Y-M.
Mm-hmm.
And so there to me was another code that still needs to be deciphered.
Mm-hmm.
But this leave room for nature, leave room for nature, and then NYN, I think there is a code in there. And, of course, the Rosicrucians are famous for their ciphers. And of course, the English language was crafted by the fine Rosicrucian Sir Francis Bacon,
mm-hmm.
when he
mm-hmm.
was known as Shakespeare.
Right, right.
And he was known as Shakespeare because he was known as Spear Shaker, and the reason he's known as Spear Shaker is because he worshipped the goddess, who is Athena, who shook her spear and brought about the olive plant. So, it was just, oh my God.
And
you know,
so it goes. Yeah.
It just keeps going.
So you made your way to Nashville, and you hooked up with William Henry, correct?
Yeah.
And so what happened there?
Well, so then I get to Nashville, and I spend my first night in a hotel on this whole trip, and I get up in the morning and go out and meet William at the Palace of Athena, at Athena's Temple in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it's Moon Day. It's Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? She's off for the Moon Day because she's a lunar deity. I never did get to see the 42-foot golden-crusted goddess standing inside of the Parthenon. I was a little disappointed, but it was, oh well, you know. But William just met me there, and he tossed me into his car, and we went on, and he took me to the Temple of Mars from the Temple of Athena. And he's describing to me how this is all very much like Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
And the Temple of Mars was, of course, the war memorial there in Nashville.
Right, right.
And there is a big statue of Mars sitting in a throne there. I didn't get to get up to it because we were racing on. And he took me to the Bicentennial Capitol Mall, which sits out in front of the Capitol building in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, Kathy, Brian also lists Tennessee and Nashville as one of the head mind control areas back in the time when she was mind control slave.
Right, right.
Of course, David Icke, the country music industry. And I brought that up with William, and he was like, oh, I wish David would come here and see for himself, and that's not really true. And it seemed that William wasn't as informed on the nefarious nature of the Illuminati. He was very curious about the instruments that they were creating, but hadn't quite gotten to the point of realizing how evil they really were. So, of course, I dumped a bunch of videos on him. he didn't even know 911 was an inside job. I was like, oh my God. Okay, you got some learning to do. Here you go.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully he'll watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But so this Capitol Mall was built in 1996, and he told me that that was the same year that Saddam Hussein, who of course is Nebuchadnezzar reincarnated,
mm-hmm.
was building the same Temple Mall in Baghdad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that this thing was actually a large instrument, a lyre or a guitar or whatever you want to call it, but it was made out of stone and earth and ran about 200 yards. It runs through the different chakra points, starting with a fountain of dancing water at the base chakra, and that's and then the next thing is a grass that's a perfect square, and that's, of course, the symbol of earth. Man, the
mm-hmm.
four elements
mm-hmm.
square.
Mm-hmm.
And then right above that is the amphitheater. Now, this amphitheater was quite intriguing because it had two looming guard towers standing over it. And when you're down in the amphitheater, you can't see the upper chakras at all. You wouldn't even really think about the rest of the court or the mall when you're down there. And it makes you face the Capitol Hill, which is on a three-tiered hill. And you don't see anything from there, except for the stage, where they want to keep you in your lower chakra, where
mm-hmm.
you're worrying about sexual violence.
Right, right.
And then on the back of the stage, there are seven gateways. And these are like the strings of the instrument. I'm not sure what's behind the gateways, but there are seven doorways there. And you would then travel up over the amphitheater, and we walked up towards the first chakra point, which was the heart chakra, after the base chakra. And what there is a large black granite wall that encases this whole thing. And on this large black granite wall is a timeline that starts at a billion years ago and comes up to 1996. in the wall whatsoever, and he says that this dating of a billion years ago is the dating of Atlantis, what William Henry was telling me.
Mm-hmm.
And once we got to the heart chakra, he says, now look to your left. And I look over, and there's a big break in the wall. And he says, this is the date on that break is the Civil War. And this is the only break in the wall, and that's right at the heart chakra. So the heart is broken there.
Right, right.
This entire edifice, this entire mall, is actually one of Solomon's seals to bind the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to look at it from the air.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually, there are thousands of bodies interred underneath it because it is a Native American burial ground that this thing is sitting atop. So now you realize that we have a magical sigil to bind souls that is sitting on top of a bunch of souls, at least a bunch of bodies. And it says so right on it. So as we walked along, we got up to the throat chakra. And he said he was talking with a shaman, and at this point, the shaman got a tear in his eye because he realized that he was at the point in the chakra system where this was where you would emit love or hate. And he looked to his left again, and over there was a large black earth. And this black earth sits atop a pedestal, and it's rotating on water. And I wish I had filmed that, but William had asked me not to film because he's doing a film on this with Whitley Strieber.
Mm-hmm.
And so he asked me not to film our interview. But I wish I had stopped the film, at least that black earth rotating. I've got some pictures of it, but you know, to see it rotating is something else. Now, this black earth is sitting there, and it's loomed over by these black monoliths. And on all the black monoliths are etched the accomplishments of the Illuminati or of science or whichever way you want to look at it. But as I see this picture, this black brotherhood needed to destroy matter and create matter. These are two things that were critical to them and the real reason behind the Royal Society and the creation of universities. And so what is highlighted on each of these black monoliths is these creations that have allowed the portal to be open.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Big nuclear explosion, and then down to the creation of matter through photons.
Do you think that this has, or possibly could have, something to do with William's concepts about the Stargate?
So this was the part of the place that he called the Stargate.
Yeah.
And if you sit on this particular bench, which also just happens to be surrounded in Hollywood,
another coincidence.
Yeah, quite the coincidence, huh?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I took a piece of each of the Hollywood from each of the guys that stand from the Stargate. And when you sit on this particular bench right in front of the what William called the Stargate, which is where this black earth rotates, it looks just like the Stargate in the movie, except for instead of being a big circle, there's the big earth. And it has even the walkway, the pathway that you see them walk up in SG-1. And with the looming black monolith next to it, it really looks like a device, like a Stargate. And in front of the big black earth is a DNA spiral made out of pentagrams that's outlined on the ground. Now, the picture I have up on FreemanTV.com doesn't quite give you the full impression. You have to really be standing there higher up to see it, but you can see it.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, you know, there's another big clue that the DNA has everything to do with this type of portal and this Stargate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then it got really intriguing as we got to the crown chakra. Now, when you get to the crown chakra, it is made out of three different variations of granite, each with variations of quartz in them. And it was a red, white, and a blue granite that this thing was made out of.
Hmm.
The ground, the big circle in the center. And it had the seal of Tennessee, which is three pentagrams with their points all facing each other. Which, if you look at the negative view, is actually the symbol for Mitsubishi.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is, the circle is surrounded in a semicircle by columns that are all 50 or 25 foot tall. They're There's 50 columns, 25 foot tall, and each one of them has cells in their capital. And when you stand in the center of the pentagram, there is an iron post that goes down into the ground, and if you stand on that iron post in the center of the pentagram, everything you say or any tone you emit comes back at you from all 50 columns in this crazy
reverberation. Wow, no kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, I did manage to get that on film. I handed my camera to William and said, here, film me.
Yeah. Wow, and that's interesting.
Yeah, and that shows you that this is an instrument.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Sure it does. Yeah.
And now what's really intriguing is you step one foot to the left, one foot to the right, and there is no echo whatsoever. Only when you're standing in the center of the pentagrams with the iron post in the ground do you get the reverberation.
Wow. That's
and then, of course, right at the head of this, they have granite blocks that surround the circle, and they have the famous country music stars all etched in there. And the one at the head was of course Elvis Presley, and of course the next place I was heading was Graceland. And I asked William, I said, well, is there anything else in Memphis that I should see other than Graceland? And he says, well, there's of course the big pyramid. And I was like, oh yeah, I forgot all about that.
Mm-hmm.
It was funny because I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to find the big pyramid. But sure enough, boy, that thing, you can't miss it. And came looming up over the horizon.
So that must have been one hell of a trip then, huh?
I'm telling you. I was so amazed. I mean, just in one day, meeting with William Henry, going through that whole tour, jumping in my car, heading to Memphis, going to the big pyramid, and I got some great shots of that because the sun just happened to be right over the apex.
Mm-hmm.
And then to Graceland, where I left my mark on the Graceland wall, as everybody does. I had to leave. I had a little family come up to me and say, do you happen to have a pen? You know, everybody wanted to leave their mark, but mine was in the car, so I ran back to the car, but by then the family had left, so I had to leave my name up there. So I wrote, Elvis was a mind-control slave. Free. And then I took a big picture of that and jumped in my car and headed to Jackson, Mississippi. Now, as I was heading to Jackson, Mississippi, and this is all one day. This is just one day of my trip.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to Jackson, Mississippi, and as I'm entering the northern side of the city, there's a giant obelisk on the side of the highway. It's about half the size of the Washington Monument, but yeah, almost identical. But there's no road leading to it, no anything, and I was very shocked to see it. I did not expect to see that. And then their war memorial there in Jackson, Mississippi is all dedicated to the goddess. And there's every different variation of the goddess on the capitals there. And then it says something about to the effect of all these soldiers have given their lives to right satanic wrong. And I thought that was pretty curious.
Wow, that is interesting. Very, very intriguing. I have one final question, and I really appreciate your time tonight. I just wondered if you could say a couple things about your thoughts regarding two upcoming important dates. The first is the 2008 election, and the second one is 2012. Thoughts on those?
Absolutely. You know, I have a universal conspiracy theory. Nothing left out.
Okay.
Okay, well, it has been my belief for a dozen years now. Now, you know, I predicted W being railroaded into office.
Mm-hmm.
And I did this by realizing the Kabbalistic meaning of W, which is connected to the fallen angels. You can read about all of this on Freeman TV. Don't go to Freeman.tv because you'll end up seeing Carson Daly naked in the shower. Go to FreemanTV.com.
Okay, yeah, we don't want to see Carson Daly naked in the shower.
No. Sometimes I wonder if they're doing this just to ride my wave or something. You know, CNN put out an article about Anna Nicole and mind control. And I was like, I wonder if they're just trying to combat my articles. I don't really know how popular or anything. You know, I'm just a guy, you know?
I don't know
my reach. But anyway, so in predicting W's railroaded into office, now this, of course, is psychological warfare for us to lose faith in our system, just as Clinton being brought forth with the Monica Lewinsky scandal was so that we lost faith in the man.
Right.
And, of course, all of this is just poppycock in the first place, because Bill Clinton's a mind-controlled slave, and Bush is as well, and, you know, skull and bones. And, you know, it's all a huge farce. We've never elected a president. That's all just stuff for the masses to eat up. So you can predict what's going to occur. And so forcing W into office, when I made that prediction, or, you know, I don't even want to call it. I have a running hypothesis that has proven itself scientifically because I predicted all of these events. I predicted 9/11 to the day. My hypothesis is fairly sound. And my prediction for W was that he would be the last American president. Now, I said this 12 years ago. W will be railroaded into office and he will be the last American president. And I still stand by that. And what I expect to occur after the whole 9/11 scenario, and now had I known a couple more details, I would have been able to predict the exact targets as well.
Mm-hmm.
I knew the date because that was the date that HW had announced there will be a new world order for the first time publicly.
Right.
Well, then I later find out that the Twin Towers had a Masonic cornerstone laying ceremony on 9/11 when it was built. And the Pentagon had a Masonic cornerstone laying ceremony on 9/11 when it was built.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so had I known these two facts, I definitely would have said, oh, they're going to hit the Pentagon and the Twin Towers. But I only found that out afterwards. So I went looking for things that followed this type of thought, and I ended up with the White House. Now, the White House had its Masonic cornerstone laying ceremony on 10/13. Which, of course, is the anniversary date of the death of the Templars, which, of course, the Freemasons are just the resurrection of the Templars. So I'm predicting now that there is going to be an event at the White House on 10/13 this year, which will be the 700th anniversary of the death of the Templars. And either because I believe in their system of having to tell us what they're going to do before they do it, just like the 9/11 scenario was given away in the Lone Gunman episode and the pilot episode, and just like the stealing of the gold under the towers was given away in Die Hard, and you can go on and on with this type of thing, that it absolutely seems that we have to give our free will acceptance to the event. And so before they do these events, they promote them to us. And then we give our free will acceptance by watching the movie and not being appalled or, you know, going and just, and that's my belief. And so now they've been coming out, there's two movies out now about the death of the president. One is titled The Death of a President, which was promoted by C-SPAN and I believe CNN. And of course is all about W being shot.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen this?
Yeah.
Oh, amazing film. I mean, obviously a top dollar film. Way too many helicopter shots.
You know,
there's obviously a lot of money spent on this film.
Yeah.
And so it's my thought that they're going to eliminate W on 10/13 at the White House in one way or another. Maybe he'll be shot. Because his name in Skull and Bones is temporary.
Can we stop right here for a second? I need to take a quick break. City of